This is NPR News. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, President Bush says secret prisons, yes, torture, no. And Condoleezza Rice compares the war in Iraq to the American Civil War. Joining me today from NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. is Joe Davidson, an editor at the Washington Post. Also here, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history from the University of Pennsylvania. And finally, Nat Irvin joins us. He's a professor of future studies at Wake Forest University, and he is joining us from member station WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I welcome you all. Interesting week for the White House, Joe Davidson. On the plus side, I guess, this whole leak about the CIA was pushed away from the White House, it seems. But we did see the president go out and talk about a problem, and that is, again, this question of how far you can go with the war against terror and admission of, quote, secret CIA prisons. Now his suggestion is we're moving all of those people who were held to Guantanamo Bay, and they will, in fact, receive justice and a just trial. But he also, interestingly enough, moved much of that reasoning to Congress. By means of suggesting that they weren't on top of things.
You know, I think that this is, it's clearly an effort by the president to kind of shape the debate. And the Republican Party, and I think this particular White House, is very, very good at that. I don't know that they're going to be able to shape the debate enough, however, to win this particular political battle. Because there are Democrats and some Republicans, including some very influential Republicans on the Hill, who are not happy with the president's proposals. He's clearly done an about-face compared to where he had been and the administration had been. Nonetheless, his proposals for tribunals, which would allow people to be tried and convicted with secret evidence, rubs a lot of people on both sides of the aisle the wrong way. And I think that despite his really grandiose effort, the speech he gave at the White House the other day, very powerful, but probably not convincing. Not convincing, certainly, for the Democrats as well as a significant number of Republicans.
Mary, it's interesting because we've been talking about for almost a year now this White House reeling, not being able to find terra firma and get their feet firmly planted. Whether you like what they're saying or not, they don't seem to be as reeling as they were some months ago.
No, I mean, I think that Bush is moving his strong suit. I mean, what else was he going to do? I mean, it's terror all day long until the election. I think he created a lot of problems for the Europeans in disclosing and admitting that there were these prisons. I guess that doesn't bother him. And also, this was not so much about the prisons. It was about seeing the faces of the people who are there so we'd be scared. And then talking about Osama bin Laden again, who has emerged. I've been wondering all this time whatever happened to him and whether we're going to get him. But now I guess we are going to get him. But this is all about scaring the heck out of everybody, making people forget about Iraq or think it's part of this, and then hoping he can scare us right on to the election. But what else does he have? I mean, this is the only thing. His poll numbers, according to some polls, are still going down despite these speeches that he's just given. So I can understand why he's doing it. Whether it works or not depends on how strong the memories are of the American people.
Not the continuing cry for the head of Donald Rumsfeld we're hearing from both sides of the aisle, frankly. If, in fact, the president asks for this resignation publicly or privately and gets it, how much traction do you think he gets from that?
Oh, he doesn't. First of all, there will not be any resignation of Donald Rumsfeld, and I think that resolution failed for a lack of a second. It's just obviously an attempt by the Democrats to try to cast the administration in a bad light, which they're already in a bad light. I think that this latest revelation about the CIA prison.
CIAA.
I almost said CIAA. You know, what it struck me, this, in all seriousness, it's an illustration of how American values have been put on trial as opposed to the terrorist. Inadvertently, what the president has done here and his proposal for the tribunals actually puts America in the position of actually trying people and then the possibility of putting them to death without them ever having seen the evidence against them. And as Mary and Joe have already pointed out, there are a lot of Republicans and Democrats alike who are saying that this is not an American value that we are willing support. And I think the president, for that reason, is in some trouble here.
Mary, they've sent everyone out to wrap the flag in this fight against terror. We see in the latest issue of Essence magazine, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice comparing the war in Iraq to America's Civil War, suggesting that had America done the same in the Civil War, that slavery would not have ended as quickly.
Well, that shows how desperate they are. And it shows how, I mean, that comparison is simply ridiculous. Any school child should know that the war, Civil War, was about saving the Union. That's why they went to war in the first place, and that Lincoln only issued the Emancipation Proclamation after they didn't have enough troops, and he had to get some black soldiers to use as a fit and necessary war measure. The United States is not like the North going to war there in this situation. The United States is a foreign power with some people locally having a civil war. And we're somehow engaged. But I was more interested, Ed, I got to tell you this, in her statement that she wasn't responsible for what happened at Katrina because she does foreign policy. She doesn't intervene in these. I started to use a bad word. Anyway, when the Michigan case was before the Supreme Court on affirmative action, the press reported that she was in the meeting when Bush decided to go against affirmative action. And after everybody else was debating it and Colin Powell was in the meeting and he was Secretary of State, she persuaded the president to go ahead and oppose affirmative action in that case. And that was publicly reported. And every black person who's ever been a cabinet officer or been in any administration has done the same. But this is not a civil war in Iraq with the United States. The United States is a foreign power intervening in what has now become a civil war.
But her point, Joe, to be fair to Condoleezza Rice, was not comparison in terms of civil war as much as it was the idea of we cut and run now, we're going to see the continuation of, quote, bad things.
Well, you know, that might be true, but I think that to just frame the argument in that way ignores everything that went before it. Iraq was not in its current predicament before the United States invasion. And so all of what is happening now stems from that invasion. And so, yes, you can say, and I think you can make a strong argument, that to cut and run now, things would only get worse. But to do that without any reference to what went before that, what was the situation before the United States invasion, what impact has the United States had on Iraq in terms of its current situation. I mean, I simply think you have to have the whole argument there.
Nat, let me further my what question. Mary brought up and then pick up on your point of further what Mary brought up. I was going to suggest this. The article, she goes on further to talk about the Katrina situation and ask about the president's response. This is her quote. Quote, I resent the notion that the president of the United States, this president of the United States, would somehow decide to let people suffer because they were black. I found that to be the most corrosive and outrageous claim that anybody could have made, and it was wholly and totally irresponsible, end quote.
Well, she's probably right about that. I don't think that the president didn't respond because the folks in New Orleans were black. I think it's just representative of the overall mismanagement that's symptomatic of this government. I mean, a lot of our institutions have failed under this MBA president, so it wouldn't necessarily have anything to do with whether you're black or not. I think with reference to the way that she characterized the Civil War and with using the lens of the Civil War to characterize the war in Iraq, I just was dumbfounded by that. I was trying to figure out, now, who are the slaves now? Would it be the Kurds, the Shiites, the Sunnis? And North?
I think the remark will only further alienate the black community from this administration's war policy. And, of course, the black community already and from the beginning has not supported it.
Yeah, and then, you know, Joe, I'm thinking if this is the lens that the Secretary of State is now using, we ought to be doing a hell of a much better job in Sudan, shouldn't we? I mean, that might work.
Well, save Reagan, in my lifetime at least, this administration has had the hardest time in terms of even more so than his father, who did reach out in to some degree, particularly after the riots in Los Angeles, to the black community. We have seen, as Joe suggested, just stumble after stumble when trying to connect.
And what Condi Rice does is each time she makes statements, she uses bad examples. That's what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe she needs somebody on her staff who can give her good examples as opposed to bad examples.
Mary,
and then people just get
madder. Benevolent and give her a call.
They're running out of examples right now, Mary, though. I mean, you know, there's nothing left in the closet.
That's right. All right, let me turn our attention to Martin Luther King III, who is on a crusade down south and one will assume across the country to eradicate poverty. He says, quote, America is the only industrialized nation in the world where the gap between the rich and the poor is continuing to grow. This, of course, in the shadow of the Poor People's Movement we know made so famously by his late father. Joe Davidson, I just did a panel for the Congressional Black Caucus on poverty and race. It is a continuing problem. It is a growing problem. It is a problem that has yet to go away in this country in spite of all of the money that we have. And certainly, as we pointed out, Mary Berry, on this program before, when you look at the cost of this war, ending poverty is something that we're not going to see anytime soon from the federal government, at least.
No, and I think it's interesting to see how well Martin Luther King III does in his travels around the country, to see what kind of base he can develop, what kind of support he can develop. And it's interesting also that he was one of these meetings was in eastern Tennessee, where there's not a lot of black people in this particular location. And he, you know, he took pains to point out that statistically white people are more in, there are more white people in poverty than other folks. And so whether or not he can kind of rekindle this country to have a drive against poverty, a war against poverty, if you will, remains to be seen. I frankly think it's going to take a lot more than Martin Luther King III, who simply doesn't have the stature, of course, of his father, but then again, who does, to do this.
Mary, it's interesting because I always say, you know, the conspiracist in me suggests that it was the Poor People's Movement that got Dr. King killed versus any civil rights push that he had. But to really push against poverty in this country really uncovers a whole lot of mess.
Well, we already saw with Katrina when we had all that discussion about how poverty is now uncovered and now we're going to spend the whole year figuring out what to do about poverty, and then we didn't do anything. And that Marty has a very tough job trying to do something. I'm happy to see him do it, and I agree with you that it was when Martin Luther King's vision became more expansive that he became dangerous, coming against a war in Vietnam and then the Poor People's Movement and all the rest. So I wish Marty well, and anything that anybody can do to try to focus on poor people is good. But and it, the reason why there are more poor white people than there are poor black people because there are more poor white people, right,
exactly.
Joe?
Exactly.
So I think we should wish him well, but I doubt seriously whether, in fact, we're going to get any agenda to do anything about this anytime soon. Welfare reform, renewal, and workfare, as we have it now, is the only thing anybody wants to talk about in terms of poverty.
And, Nat, let's be honest, in the time of reality television and spokespeople from rap groups being as upfront as anyone else, it's hard to think that a poverty as that a position as unsexy as poverty will be able to really be pushed on a national agenda.
Yeah, I think that when you listen at young Mr. King and in comparison, you can't help but compare him to his father. You see that he really is, at least doesn't strike me as being the person who can really carry this mantle. And in fact, it seems to me that the whole mantle of poverty has passed the King family by, largely because of the debacle with the King Center. I just think they've just lost, unfortunately, have lost a position that they may have been able to sustain had that not been such a public disgrace, frankly. I think that, you know, when we're talking about poverty these days, we're really going to have to talk strategically, tactically about the importance of marriage, the importance of education, being competitive in a global economy. You have to think about, you know, the resurgence possibly of labor unions and how they will be able to maybe perhaps increase wages with a new increase in the number of service jobs. I mean, you really have to think about poverty in some ways in the same way that we have thought about it in the past. But I believe in a global economy that we're in now, it requires a different much more strategic thinking than just rallying people around and saying, look at how poor we are. I'm afraid
The stagnation of wages, which has taken up a lot of discussion now everywhere. Everybody's trying to figure out what to do about it for everybody except the people who are at the top. And what we're talking about is people who are working, who have jobs, and who just don't make enough money, most of them, not just people who are not working. And
right,
so I think you're right that all these factors have to be taken into account. But so long as globalization and free markets and tax cuts and all those things prevail, it's really hard to see how you're going to do anything, if even if people are morally committed to doing something about it.
But Joe, isn't that the problem, the idea of what Mary suggested? And I've often suggested that that is the reason we've not seen the move in poverty. The haves are the people that can move this legislation. And truly, if we eradicate poverty, that means I've got to give away a couple of my toys as well.
It reminds me of the argument, the way we used to talk about folks, the poverty pimps, people who would get some grants, and the first thing would do is go out and buy a high back leather chair to sit in their office.
Showing your age, Joe.
That's true. But let me go back to one thing that Nat was saying. I think that there really has long been an effort to move simply beyond the rhetoric of we must end poverty to actually do something about it. I'm reminded, for example, of Reverend Leon Sullivan's operations in Philadelphia, where he not only protested against the Tasty Bake Company there, but he also created a job training program, an international job training program. And so, I mean, I think those kinds of efforts have always been there.
And they continue to be there. If you take Philadelphia and look at what Kenny Gamble, the great songwriter and producer, continues to do to try to eradicate poverty and help in that area. But we can find those pockets across the country all over. But to really eradicate poverty, it's going to have to take a huge national move.
That's true, and it has to be multi-pronged. I mean, the demonstrations against poverty, as well as the job training, as well as the education. I mean, it simply has to be multi-pronged.
All right. Well, guys, thank you very much. Have a good weekend. Good to have you with us.
Thank
you. We'll see you next week.
All right.